You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, Pat Lane, as always. Today is episode 53. That makes it the Chris Slade episode. And if you're a Red Sox player, a jersey number that you do not want to wear, as a matter of fact, it's been a jersey number on a player or coach for the Red Sox since 1999. But it's bounced around quite a ton. From 99 to 2000, it was Tomokazu Oka. In 2001, it was Angel Santos. In 2002, it was Josh Hancock. In 2003, it was Andy Abad. In 2004, for part of it, was Phil Seibel. For the other half of 2004, it was Terry Adams. 2005 was Chad Bradford. 2006 was Ralph Truel, who was a coach. 2007 was Brendan Donnelly. 2008 was the great David Ardsma. 2009, 2010 was Fernando Cabrera. From 2010 to 2012, prior to Milton, Rich Hill. And from 2013 to 2017 was John Farrell, his time here as the manager. And then Craig Bjornsson now has it as a coach for the Red Sox. Lots and lots of numbers at 53 for the Red Sox. Not a ton of sustained success there for 53. So maybe not a great sign for Craig Bjornsson, but maybe he can turn around. You never know. So today we have a really good episode today. We have Russell Baxter on. He's the creator of ProFootballGuru.com. Really, really fun interview with him. We just basically talk football for a pretty long time. And it's a really, really cool, fun interview that we did. And so I really enjoyed that. And we appreciate him coming on. I also have the 3-Minute Drill and This Week in Sports History afterwards, as always. So I'm going to get you right into that interview. But before we do, I want to remind you, of course, that our podcast is sponsored by Beard Brand. And, you know, you Bruins fans out there, I know you had to shave the playoff beard this week. Certainly frustrating. But don't forget that Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. So do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. So without further ado, let's get into the interview with Russell Baxter. All right, so we're going to welcome onto the show Russell Baxter. You probably know him from Twitter, at BaxFootballGuru. He is the creator of ProFootballGuru.com. He writes for SI.com. You know, used to work for ESPN. Super, super knowledgeable guy. So really appreciate him having on the show. Welcome to the show, Russell. Russell.
Well, I appreciate that, Pat. More specifically NFL Spin Zone and Fanside, which are part of the SI.com family and so on. But yeah, I spent a lot of time at ESPN, stints around television. It's football. It's fun. And I have a good time doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think maybe we just gave you a new nickname, Ruster. I'm not sure what happened there, but I'll go with Russell.
I spent my formative years being referred to as Ruffles potato chips and Brussels sprouts. So, you know, not much baby.
All right then. Okay. So pretty much anything goes. I like it. So the draft is over. I basically, you know, want to talk, and obviously my podcast is focused in Boston really, but I just want to kind of look around the league a little bit. The draft is over. We have a pretty good idea of where the UDFAs are going. And obviously not all the free agents have signed, clearly, like Dez Bryant, guys like that haven't signed yet. So everything isn't done. But so far, if you just kind of want to look at the most improved versus the least improved, you know, who's on that list for you?
Well, I did a piece for Fanside talking about the teams that helped themselves out the most during the draft. And the team that struck me was the Indianapolis Colts. Now, of course, it's easy when, you know, you pick as high as they did. You know, obviously the first round pick from Notre Dame, the guard who, you know, if Notre Dame legacy the last few years holds up, I mean, they've got themselves a heck of a player. But they also went, guard in the second round with Braden Smith from Auburn. So I look at what the Colts did, who did not do a lot during free agency at all. They really parlayed it into young players. And, you know, you look to the fact that, you know, they made that trade with the Jets and then wound up taking four players in the second round along with, you know, Quentin Nelson in the first round. So this is a Colts team that for years, okay, and listen, we can do all you want about Andrew Luck and all that stuff, but I think the thing that impressed me about Chris Ballard did, Pat, was he set himself up with good offensive line, a pair of guards, and defensive players who can get after the quarterback, front seven defensive players. Remember last year they kind of concentrated on the secondary in the draft. I think what he's done is he's building a young team that could succeed regardless of who the quarterback is. Okay, will we see Andrew Luck? I mean, it is a mystery wrapped in an enigma, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we know Jacoby Brissett is there as well. Again, Chris Ballard is looking to build this team the right way. For years, even with Andrew Luck, and even in the latter stages of Peyton Manning's career, what was the problem with the Colts? No defense and no running game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, taking Philip Dorsett in the first round, like, what are you kidding me? All the needs they had,
took Philip Dorsett in the first round. Different mindset. You know, Chris Ballard comes over from Kansas City. You know, he obviously worked with Andy Reid for a spell and so on. Listen, go back to the Super Bowl last year. I mean, you can say Carson Wentz and Nick Foles and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Philadelphia Eagles were the best team in football last year because they were not only good in the offensive and defensive lines, they were deep. And that depth showed up when they lost Jason Peters midway through the season, and their depth on the defensive line showed up in the Super Bowl. I mean, people will remember that they got more heat on Tom Brady in the fourth quarter than they did in the first three quarters of the game.
That's for sure. Yep.
That's because you go back 2 weeks earlier, and Jacksonville, who had all those sacks, but they were not deep on the defensive line in the fourth quarter, they kind of faded.
Right. Well, it's funny that you mentioned the Colts because one of the questions, you know, later on, I was going to talk about Quentin Nelson because I think he could have an impact pretty much right away when he comes in. And, you know, they did draft a guard in the second round. They also drafted 2 years ago Ryan Kelly, who was kind of hurt a little bit last year and stuff. And, you know, so I was a little bit concerned about, you know, where he would be. But, you know, he's a really good center. And so now you talk about a really good center and then, you know, a phenomenal guard and hopefully another really good guard, you know, they get in the second round. So, you know, the philosophy for them is obvious, protecting the quarterback. And like you said, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with Luck. I mean, Luck is taking snaps, but he still hasn't thrown the ball as far as everyone knows. So it's like, who the heck knows what he's going to do? But if you have a very good offensive line, no matter who the quarterback is, at least they can go in with a little bit of peace of mind to know they're not going to get killed on every play.
Listen, we probably as a society like to focus professional football and college football and high school. It's all about the quarterback. You know, how many times have you heard the quarterback-driven league, et cetera, et cetera? Well, you know, you can't drive without an engine, okay? And if you don't think – I mean – It baffles me that how many examples are we going to see? And listen, the beauty of football is you can win so many different ways. And we saw the Broncos win their Super Bowl pretty much on their defense. You know, they had poor play from Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler and 31 turnovers as a team. And their defense really carried them to that title in 2015. And then last year, you know, Carson Wentz, sensational, gets hurt. You know, backup quarterback comes in, Nick Foles. And, you know, performs very, very well against – I think we almost forget that the Eagles, okay – now, I know there was a defensive touchdown in there by Patrick Robinson. In their – you know, they struggled against Atlanta to kind of get going offensively in the first round.
Right.
They put 79 points on the board against the Vikings and the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of how they did it. And, you know, while their defense wasn't great against New England – they made plays constantly. So, again, I can give you all kinds of stats, and it's not. And I'm not anti-quarterback, But this is always going to be a team game. I mean, one of my favorite things to throw out there is, listen, I know the NFL has been since 1920. No one pushes history more than I do, especially on Twitter. But yeah. Isn't it interesting to note that we've had 52 years of Super Bowls, and not once during that era has a quarterback led the NFL in passing yards and won the Super Bowl the same season?
I mean, it's crazy. It really is. And I mean, look, I think it comes back to, and I pushed it all year long. I said, I do not want Tom Brady to win the NFL MVP, because if he wins the MVP, they're not winning the Super Bowl. And I was convinced, and people poo-pooed it, and they said, oh, that's ridiculous, and you're stupid, and it doesn't matter. And they're 0-9 now in the last 9 times the NFL MVP has made the Super Bowl. And not only that, the last MVP to win the Super Bowl was Kurt Warner in 1999.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, like we're approaching 20 years now. And it's just like, you know, and it's not like the MVPs aren't coming from non-playoff teams. They're coming from the best team in the league typically. And usually it's the quarterback from the best team in the league. And they're losing in the playoffs or the Super Bowl. It's not a coincidence, you know. And so
let's put it this way, Pat. More times than not, if you're winning the MVP, you've put up huge statistical numbers, obviously. That's an oxymoron, statistical numbers. But a lot of times that also indicates a lack of balance.
Right.
Okay. Kurt Warner also holds another distinction. He's the only quarterback to throw at least 40 touchdown passes in the season and win the Super Bowl the same year.
Really? Wow. The only. Great stat. That's a good point.
I mean, Peyton Manning, 55, lost by 35.
Right.
Tom Brady, 50.
Scored 14 points.
Patriots get beat.
Yeah.
49 by Peyton, they didn't even make the AFC Championship game. 48 by Marino, lost Super Bowl 19. Go on and on and on and on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Wow. Good point. So, I mean, that's... Yeah.
Well, here's... I know we're in this era now and so on. Just because you have a quarterback that helps you win your fantasy league, it doesn't mean he's going to win your reality league.
Right. No, it's a good point. And I think the balance is something that's severely overlooked by a lot of fans. And I think, unfortunately, by a lot of teams. I think that's why the Patriots have done so well here, is that they focus on that balance and that late depth, because it's not about, a draft in particular and a roster. It's not about your first round picks. You only have a limited amount of first round picks. It's about the guy you hitting on guys later on in the draft and also undrafted free agents. And if you can't hit on those guys, then you're going to have some serious trouble competing in the league, because you may have some really good guys up front, but if they get hurt or they tire out, the guy that comes in stinks, you know? And it's like, at that point, you know, what are you going to do? So it's important to have that depth.
Well, you think about what we talk about as far as being important in football. It's all important. I understand that. Your quarterback, protecting him, and securing the middle of your defense, correct?
Right.
Okay. So the Eagles lost their left tackle, they lost their starting quarterback, and they lost their middle linebacker and won the Super Bowl.
It's true. I mean, that's, yeah.
But
right.
Howie Roseman went out and not only built a team, he built a deep team over the past years. It wasn't overnight. It was a 2-year process.
Right. Right. No, it's a good point. I mean, it really is. It's a good point, and I think it kind of gives you an idea of what you should be looking for and what you're trying to do. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens. The Eagles just, oh, God. I mean, I don't know how at this point, they have to be number one in everyone's rankings, because they're the same team that beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and they're getting their, MVP caliber quarterback back. So, if the Eagles aren't number one in your preseason, standings, which mean nothing, but if they're not number one in your preseason standings, I don't know what you could be looking at.
Well, I mean, listen, I am a huge champions until dethroned. I will say that the Eagles certainly have some changes on the defensive front. They certainly lost some depth there.
Right.
I think they tried to replenish it with Michael Bennett and Aloni Nada. Mm-hmm. But not having Vinny Curry, not having Bo Allen, right. Those are certainly changes. But, you know, you've got Jim Schwartz there. He knows a lot about defensive line rotation. So, you know, Torrey Smith is gone, but Mike Wallace is in. So, I mean, listen, I mean, that's the way it is for a team that's good or bad. Free agency is free agency. It's different than years past. It's why it's been so difficult to repeat. You know, I think some people overlook the fact of just how difficult it is to repeat. Because keep in mind, Pat, that twice in the last 4 years, a team had the actual chance to win back-to-back Super Bowls by playing in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And Seattle got knocked off by New England, and New England got knocked off by Philadelphia.
True. Yeah, it's true.
So we haven't seen a repeat Super Bowl champion since the Pats in 2003 and 04 when they beat Carolina and Philadelphia in back-to-back years.
Right, and those teams were – that 04 team might be the best team in the last 25 years to play in the NFL, I think. That team was unbelievable.
Well, that's always debatable and so on, but I will clearly say it was the Patriots' best team, at least in my opinion. Extremely yeah. balanced, good defense, great year from Corey Dillon. You know, I it's funny. Ever since Tom Brady started putting up electrifying numbers, and again, it goes back to my point from 10 minutes ago, the Tom Brady and the Patriots' offense, as we know now, has gotten to Super Bowls, but has not been, you know, oh, as successful as they were in the early days when they were running the football and playing very, very good defense with Teddy Bruschi and Richard Seymour and Ty Warren and Ty Law. And God, my goodness, they had more ties than Men's Warehouse.
It's true. Yeah, that team was that was so much fun, that team. It's interesting. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. That's the last team that repeated, and it's, you know, it's not a coincidence. It's hard to do, and that's why – it's difficult for me as a Patriots fan. I look at this year and I'm like, I think the Patriots are just as good as they were last year. And they lost some pieces, obviously losing left tackle Hurts and, you know, losing Amendola, I'm sorry, and losing Deion Lewis and some of those pieces, you know, and Malcolm Butler obviously as well. But, you know, to me, it's just about, you know, you're asking them now to get to a third Super Bowl in a row, you know, which obviously hasn't been done since the 90s when the Bills did it and they didn't win any of them. And it's just like, you know, it's a lot to ask them to get to another Super Bowl and then try to win this one. It's just like, it's difficult. You know, when you had it, they had it. Oh, I just, yeah, they had it last year and they should have won it and they didn't. And it's, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow because you just feel like they were there and that was their opportunity. And now you're asking them to go back again this year. It's like, that's an awful lot to ask for.
Well, listen, you know, it's funny when you think about it. The Patriots lost to the Eagles by 8. During this Belichick-Brady run, that's the largest margin of victory or defeat in any of their 8 Super Bowls.
Right.
Okay? They've played 8 games, all decided by under 10 points. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, they've won 3-point games. They've lost 3-point games. They've won 4-point games. They've lost, I mean, you know, go on and on and on and on.
Right.
The different ways. I mean, but listen, there's one way to go 5-3 in the Super Bowl, and that's get to 8 Super Bowls.
Well, right. I mean, that's, you know, it's unprecedented. And not only 8 Super Bowls, so I was talking to someone about this the other day. Tom Brady has 8 fourth quarter or overtime drives
mm-hmm.
to either tie the game or take the lead in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Which is just ridiculous. I mean, I think second on the list is Eli Manning with 2. It's just like, it's unheard of what he's been able to do. And the fact that he's done it 8 times, and obviously, you know, they lost in the Philadelphia game, clearly. And, you know, they lost in the 07 game. But, like, he still had him in those games, and he had 2 in the Atlanta game. So it's just like, you know, what he's been able to do in the fourth quarter and overtime has been unbelievable. They haven't scored a point yet in 8 Super Bowls. They haven't scored a point in the fourth quarter, which is weird. But, you know, right, the first quarter. They have yet to score a point in the first quarter of all 8 Super Bowls, which is
a point or a touchdown.
No, they haven't scored a point in.
Yeah, I mean, well, and listen, that's a great credit to Brady and so on. But it also goes to show you the kind of football they play. I mean, this has been, you know, almost a 20-year run. But
right.
I don't think, you know, when you go back and look at some of the classic teams in NFL history, this has been, as strange as it sounds, been about you know, a head coach and a quarterback putting themselves in position to win these games when it counts most. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever going to go back and look at the Patriots during this. I mean, the run is unprecedented, okay? But, you know, when you think about the 85 Bears or the 89 49ers or the Steelers of the 70s who won back-to-back Super Bowls twice, I don't think that's necessarily ever going to be. This, to me, is the greatest dynasty in the Super Bowl era, but it's not necessarily the greatest team.
Right. No, and I think you're totally right about that. And it's interesting because that's an interesting discussion that, you know, people around here have been talking about forever and people will talk about forever. Is it more Brady or more Belichick? And I think both are right. And, you know, but it's, man, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how you could differentiate, but I think you're right about that, where they are set up to be successful no matter what situation they're in. So that's
right. Well, they have act. Listen, I mean, let's be honest, Pat. Did you ever hear of situational football before the Patriots kind of made it a household name?
No, I know. I did not. No.
No, you didn't. Okay. Right. So, you know, do your job is sometimes made fun of, but it's exactly, but he's a mastermind. Okay. Doesn't mean he succeeds all the time, but right. I mean, you know, 9 straight years in the playoffs, which ties an NFL record, 9 straight division titles, which is an NFL record. If they make the playoffs this coming year, no team's ever made the postseason 10 years in a row in NFL history. Relax, Cleveland Brown fans from the AAFC NFL. Okay, so 2 different leagues.
Right.
I mean, so this is an unprecedented run.
Can we just stop for a second and just appreciate the fact that you just shouted out the AAFC? That was pretty impressive, I have to say.
Listen, you know, profootballguru.com is pro football, you know, and understanding where teams came from and how the merger took place and history. I can't tell you how many times, as much as a lot of people like history, I have to face my share of fans, per se, who tried to explain to me that nothing counts before the Super Bowl era. Which is, you know, heartbreaking to me because I'm pretty sure George Washington and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson were all present. you know, and it's funny because the Super Bowl era has actually changed. Okay? I mean, it was AFL-NFL, and then it was AFC-NFC with a different playoff format. I mean, it hasn't been 12 teams in the playoffs. That's only happened since 1990. So I often find it interesting that the Super Bowl era is oftentimes only counted, led by 49ers, Steelers, and Cowboys fans.
Right, of course, because that's what they want, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
How convenient.
Right. Yeah. You know. Well, it's, you know, it's the way it works. So, all right, let's move on here. Good discussion here, but okay, let's skip a few of these things. I've a few under the radar guys for you that could kind of have a little bit of a coming out this year. You know, just a guy or two that, you know, not a ton of people are talking about that you're kind of like, oh, that guy could have a decent year this year, or maybe, you know, do something that we thought he could do but hasn't done yet.
I'm going to tie this into a team I call the most intriguing in the NFC, Pat, and that's the Chicago Bears. You know, Ryan Pace went out and got, as it turned out, 3 wide receivers in free agency with Bernie Fowler to go with Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel. He went out and got a pass-catching/pass-throwing tight end in Trey Burton. You know, the Bears' defense came a long way last year. Couldn't absorb the fact that the Bears' offense didn't do much, especially when it came to the passing game. You know, the Bears were dead last in passing yards per game. They were 30th in the league in total yards per game. As a team, they and the Colts had 13 scores through the air in 16 games. Now, the Colts, as we know, were on, you know, did not have Andrew Luck. As we know with the Bears, they Mitch Trubisky started the final 12 games. But as we also know, 13 touchdown passes is about 4 or 5 weeks for Tom Brady, Drew Brees, or Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So They had to go out. Listen, they have a very respectable, more than a respectable running game with Jordan Howard. Terry Cohen helped there as well. I just like how the Bears approach to things. And they added more to the defense. They have Roquan Smith, the team with Leonard Floyd. They went out and got some more offensive line help as well. They went out and got another receiver in Anthony Miller from Memphis. So I think Mitch Trubisky could be a guy who takes a big leap forward. Okay, they have a new, obviously, new head coach with Matt Nagy in Chicago. Moving up in that division is hardly easy, especially when you're a Chicago team that, you know, last year didn't win a game in the division. They were 0-6, although I think they were able to clinch the AFC North sometime in December, because you will notice they went 4-0 against the Ravens, the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Browns.
So ridiculous. You know,
bad news for them is they only won one other game.
All right.
Outside of that. So, I mean,
all right.
When you're let's put it this way. When you're 0-6 in the division and 1-11 in the conference, you're not going far. But, listen, we see all the time, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm doing this series I'm doing, is we see all the time teams come from last place and win the division title. And it was really prevalent last year, not so much in terms of the numbers, but Carolina bounced back after a Super Bowl year, admittedly, but they were 6-10. They made the playoffs. Jacksonville was 3-13 and a game away from the Super Bowl after winning the South. And people forget Philadelphia 7-9, NFC East basement, Super Bowl champions. In fact, the NFC East is kind of fascinating. 3 years in a row and 5 of the last 6 years, Pat, the NFC East champion finished last the year before.
Man, that's crazy. Who finished? Oh, it was the Giants. You never know. Could be the Giants year this year.
Well, you never know. Listen, we've seen crazier things from Eli Manning. They won a Super Bowl in 2011 in a season in which they gave up more points than they scored that year. And still, amazingly, they're the only team to win a Super Bowl while suffering a 4-game losing streak in the middle of the year.
Unbelievable. And that it's funny because they deserve that win. That Patriots team was so bad in 2011. I mean, they had Julian Edelman playing slot corner. Earthwin Moreland was starting for them at corner along with Sterling Moore. And I don't know how the hell they made the Super Bowl, but they did. And if Gronk doesn't get hurt in the AFC Championship game, they probably win that game, which is just absolutely awesome.
Let's not forget something about that year. And what it did is it showed you that Tom Coughlin certainly had a little bit of Bill Belichick's number. If you remember in the season, the Giants went up to Foxborough and ended the Patriots' long home winning streak.
True. Yes, they did.
And beat them. And then the Patriots didn't lose another game the entire year until?
Until
they ran into Tom Coughlin's Giants again.
True. That's a good point. It's a good point. It's funny. So getting back to the guys that are a little bit under the radar, I actually had someone from the Bears too. I had Kevin White, who was a first-round draft pick 2-3 years ago now at this point, and has just basically been on the field for like 6 plays in the last few years. And, you know, maybe this could be the year that he seems like he's working out, he's back in shape. They have gotten a ton of other options around him. And like you say, if Trubisky makes that next step, you know, White could be a big part of that passing game. So I thought, you know, maybe him. And the other guy, too, is actually a Patriots guy, is Derek Rivers, who, you know, coming out last year seemed like he was going to be a very good pass rusher, got hurt in training camp and missed the whole year. And it's funny, but the same exact thing happened to Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers came out. He looked really good in training camp and in preseason. He gets hurt, misses the whole year. He comes back and ends up being the Super Bowl hero the next year. So, you know, I kind of look at Rivers almost like that following in the footsteps of Trey Flowers there, where he misses a year, but then comes back and, you know, he's ready to go at the start of this year. So
I kind of feel a little better about your Derek Rivers selection. I will say this, if you want to be under the radar, it would help if you would at least get on the radar. And that's been the problem with Kevin White.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. I mean, he just can't get on the field, but you know, that's why I'm like, oh, if the guy can stay healthy, then maybe he can actually do something. But, geez, I don't know.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons Ryan Pace went out and got 3 veteran wide receivers. Remember something about the Bears. Not only And listen, the Chiefs a couple years ago didn't have any wide receiver catch a touchdown pass in the season. But no Bears wideout last year caught more than one TD pass.
Yeah, it's unacceptable. I mean, the fact that either of those teams could even survive with that is unbelievable. But I mean,
because the beauty of football, as you know, is there's a lot of different ways to score. I remember a team going back a few years that played three playoff games, Pat. In the three playoff games, their offense scored one touchdown in each playoff game.
Crazy.
Just one, okay? In the last two postseason games, their defense and special teams scored a combined three touchdowns, okay? In the one game, their one offensive touchdown came from their backup quarterback because the regular quarterback got hurt. So right. Your offense managed three touchdowns in three postseason games, and you came away with a Super Bowl title. I mean, you know, think about that for a sec.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, by the way, tell me who that was.
Shoot. It's not Baltimore. I was thinking, who the hell was the, I have no idea. No idea.
Oh, you're going to kick yourself a little. Because
I'm going to be so pissed at myself.
It was the 2001 New England Patriots.
Oh, freaking, oh, you idiot. Right. Bledsoe. Oh, yeah, my God. You're right.
Brady's touchdown run in the snow. Bledsoe's
right.
Touchdown pass just before the half.
Right.
Brady's touchdown pass just
touchdown
before that.
David Patton.
The only three right. Offensive touchdowns. They got a Troy Brown punt return.
Mm-hmm.
They got an Antoine Harris. Return and a Ty Law pick six.
Right.
Three offensive touchdowns, defensive special teams touchdowns, one Super Bowl title.
Wow. Unbelievable. Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, good point. I like that. You just totally stumped me there. I can't believe that happened. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's crazy to think that that's where they came from. That's where the Patriots came from there is that, you know, not scoring any points and still winning. So,
well, listen, we saw the Broncos a couple of years ago against Carolina. They didn't even get 200 yards of offense.
Right.
Okay, but they get seven sacks in the game, six of them on Cam Newton. Sacked, fumble, you know, recovery for a touchdown.
Right.
You know, they barely did anything. But again, this game is designed that, you know, it's not all scoring runs off a bat. It's not all putting the ball in the hoop. It's not all, you know, the puck going into the net. Your offense, your defense, your special teams can all come up with points, you know, and there's so many different ways.
Right.
You know, even, you know, you can score a point by not doing anything, because the other team got a holding penalty in the end zone and you get 2 points for it.
Yep. Happened to Patriots. Yeah. All right. So before we get into, because we have one cool question at the end, but your early favorite to compete for a championship next year, you know, if you had to give three or four teams.
I mean, I think you have to go with the usual suspects. You know, I think Philadelphia and Minnesota. Obviously, the NFC, you know, obviously New England and Pittsburgh. To me, the AFC West is a little flux right now. I think that's a hard division to call, even at this moment.
Right.
I think the AFC South is a little difficult to call as well. The NFC looks like a stacked team. I'm not totally convinced that Green Bay has done enough to fix itself defensively. You know, offensively, you figure they'll be okay. Jimmy Graham's a big pickup for Aaron Rodgers. I know everybody's in love with the Niners, and a lot of people obviously in love with what the Rams did on defense via trades and free agency and so on. So the NFC kind of looks a little more stacked. You could probably maybe name, you know, the two teams. Again, how the hell do you count out New England, regardless of what they put on the field on paper, or I should say on paper, because
right.
We know it's deeper than that. We know it's, you know, the coach he always has a plan, and the plan changes from the week to week, and that's what makes them so tough to beat.
Right. No, that's a good point. It is a good point. I mean, it's funny, you know, and I know Pittsburgh's up there, but Pittsburgh makes me laugh because they don't scare me in the least. They just don't scare me in the least. I just think, you know, Pittsburgh hasn't beaten the Patriots in the playoffs, I don't think, ever. And as far as I'm concerned, until they do it, I just have no respect for Pittsburgh, you know, beating New England in the playoffs. Now, maybe Jacksonville comes to New England and beats, you know, knocks the Patriots off, and then Jacksonville plays Pittsburgh. You know, similar to what Jacksonville did to Denver in 96, where, you know, Denver was 15-1 and Jacksonville went in and knocked them off and then came to New England. The Patriots beat them, you know, ended up in the Super Bowl that year. And it's like, maybe I could see something like that happening. But as far as Pittsburgh coming in here and winning, like, I just don't see that happening.
Well, it's been a bad matchup for the Steelers, and they've tried their damnedest to change things up. I thought they had an excellent opportunity last year. But again, their defense let them down. I mean, they've not covered Rob Gronkowski for years, and he always seems to beat them. And, you know, I think the end of the game, a little bit of the panic by Ben Roethlisberger and not trying to get that game into overtime, et cetera, et cetera. I think what hurts Pittsburgh against New England is I think Pittsburgh in some ways has become a little obsessed with New England.
Yeah. Well, it's tough because, right, because you look at them and you say, we just can't beat them, so we have to do something to try to beat them, and it's like...
Right. Well, I mean, it's odd. I mean, New England struggles with Kansas City. Pittsburgh beats Kansas City.
Right.
Pittsburgh can't beat New England.
Right. It's so strange, isn't it?
Well, because this game is still about matchups.
Right.
Okay? About matchups and things you do. I mean, I like to point this out, you know... Statistically, and it's fascinating in number-wise, but you think about what Andy Reid's offense problems has given Bill Belichick at times over the last few years, especially on opening night last year. We saw them just absolutely explode.
Right.
And, of course, Doug Peterson is a disciple of Andy Reid. So riddle me this one. On opening night last year, the New England Patriots gave up 537 total yards and 42 points, correct?
Yep.
Okay. In the Super Bowl, they gave up 538 yards and 41 points.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be, you know, it seems certainly seems like there's a connection, doesn't it? It's
well, I mean, it's kind of. I mean, listen, it's more funny than anything else, but the difference of 1 yard and 1 point against
right.
similar schemes, I just find that kind of fascinating. So.
Right. No, I'm with you, and I think you can draw that kind of straight connection to Andy Reid because. And I think Reed's struggles in the playoffs have been well documented. But, you know, especially with the Chiefs, I mean, the Eagles in the Super Bowl, they didn't really get the Patriots a ton of trouble, and that was Reed, obviously. But, you know, since he took over in Kansas City, the Patriots have always had a hard time playing them. I mean, shoot, that's the team that, you know, the Patriots got blown out by in 2014 when everyone said Brady was done and, you know, they weren't going to win, you know, play anymore and the Patriots stunk and all this other stuff. And, you know, it just seems to be that every time they've run up against Andy Reid in the last, say, you know, 5 years or so, they just struggle with him, you know, and it makes sense with Peterson where, you know, he's a guy from that same mind that, you know, is kind of running those same type of plays and running his offense similar that he's able to, you know, to beat Belichick when they go face to when they go head to head as well. So. But
absolutely.
But we'll see. So last thing I want to get into, which I thought was kind of interesting, you know, it's the off season. And so things are kind of a little kind of slow, I guess, is what I would say. So I have this a new segment and it's called Change My Mind. And so I have a take, which I wouldn't call it a hot take. I don't necessarily think it's a hot take, but a take that, you know, is maybe a little bit unconventional. Maybe some people may disagree, but I feel pretty strongly about it, and so I'm kind of coming to say to you, like, you know, change my mind on this take. So here's my take. Aaron Rodgers is the most overrated player in the NFL. So, Russell, change my mind.
Listen, we've already talked for 42 minutes. I would probably take 45 minutes to convince you. Or I mean, just trying to figure out how you come up with that.
Right.
I've never seen a quarterback throw the football like Aaron Rodgers. That doesn't mean he's the best, okay? But his throwing style and the fact that the Packers have really dropped the ball in terms of defense these last few years. They finally made a coordinator change. Tom Capers is gone. Mike Pettine is in there. He's had some good years with the Jets. Former Browns head coach, who isn't a former Browns head coach, by the way, Joe Philbin is back and so on. You know, we talk about the multidimensional quarterbacks like Russell Wilson and Cam Newton and the guys who can throw and run. And I think we forget that Aaron Rodgers can throw and run. Okay, I want to say he has something like 25 rushing touchdowns in his career, which, by the way, he's only been a starter for 10 seasons, and right. yet he ranks 10th in NFL history with 313 touchdown passes. Okay, now add in the fact, Pat, have you seen Aaron Rodgers throw 100 interceptions yet?
I don't think so, no.
Has he thrown 90?
No, I don't think so.
80?
No.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I mean, you know, you look at his touchdown to interception differential every year, and it's like a softball score with somebody way ahead. Okay? So he doesn't make mistakes. He puts his team in a position to win constantly. We saw them last year when he missed a bunch of games. We saw a couple years ago where he missed a bunch of games and then came back and rescued them against the Bears and so on. Last year he came back against Carolina. He threw three picks, very characteristic, but you could also tell he was not 100% right. I mean, he is listen, there are people who don't like Aaron Rodgers for different reasons, okay? But as far as a football player, I severely disagree with him being overrated. I won't say he's underrated, okay? But
right.
And I won't say he hasn't had his – the team hasn't had its moments where you thought they would do better, okay? But, I mean, I watch him throw a football, and it's different than Marino, and it's different than Warren Moon. And it's different from Joe Namath and any of these guys with the quick release. It
right.
is amazing. And again, throw in the dimension that he can run as well. He is a multi-dimensional quarterback who, you know, hopefully can stay healthy a few more years. I mean, it's not about records or anything like that. Let's not also forget that we talk about New England making the playoffs 9 years in a row. Well, the Packers were in the playoffs 8 years in a row until this past year.
Right. Well, you know, here's the only issue that I have with Rodgers. And I think, you know, and again, to me, it's splitting hairs. And when I say overrated player in the NFL, I just feel like he's the most overrated player in the NFL because people consider him maybe the best player in the NFL. Here's a guy who has one Super Bowl appearance. Now, they obviously won that game, but he has one Super Bowl appearance. He's 9-7 in 16 playoff games. He has been in, obviously, he's been in three conference championships and lost two of them, including an epic choke against the Seahawks in 2014, you know, which obviously has a lot to do with the defense, but the offense as well. And so, you know, to me, it's because he's so highly regarded that makes him overrated. And I think you can kind of look at the same type of thing as Peyton Manning. And I don't want to necessarily lump him in with Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning and similar things where he was fantastic in the regular season and performed well in the regular season and got to the playoffs and just – and, you know, now his numbers in the postseason are better than Peyton Manning's numbers in the postseason. So Manning turned into like a little bit of a puddle in the postseason and, you know, threw a lot of interceptions and had some really bad games. Whereas Rodgers doesn't necessarily have that track record, but his team still don't win the games. And so it's like, you know, as the best quarterback in the league, you're willing your team to win even with guys like Earthwin Moreland and Sterling Moore starting at cornerback. If you're the best quarterback in the league, and I haven't seen Rodgers do enough of that for me to be considered the best quarterback in the NFL. And so that's why, to me, I think.
Well,
you know,
I'll be honest with you, Pat. You sound like you're a little defensive because people consider Aaron Rodgers maybe better than Tom Brady.
Well, maybe, but it's not, that's possible, but it's not, to me, it's okay. Is he the best quarterback in the NFL? Like, I don't know. I mean, but where has it been in the playoffs? You know, to only have one Super Bowl win, I think you look back on a career, and I think, you know, and it haunts Marino, where Marino had no Super Bowl victories. You know, and
right.
Manning getting that second one with Denver, and even though he was horrible that year, and he did nothing in the Super Bowl, he did enough in the AFC Championship game to beat the Patriots, and he was
right.
the starting quarterback of that Super Bowl. And, you know, yes, he was irrelevant in that game. I mean, the Broncos could have won that game with me playing quarterback, but it doesn't matter. He gets his second Super Bowl as a starting quarterback, and that's enough for him. That kind of differentiates him from those guys that just won one Now he wins two. I really think Rodgers has to win a second one to be considered, you know, one of those all-time greats. It's tough because I know he's a great quarterback and he's got the numbers and, you know, physically and what he can do on the field as a quarterback is great. But it does come down to those championships and how your team performs in the playoffs, and he hasn't done enough of it, I don't think.
Well, see, you just contradicted yourself, to be honest with you, Pat. You just said you wonder how the team does. Okay? We just talked about this. This is not a one-man game.
Right.
Okay? Have you ever heard of Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus?
I have. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know they never played in the postseason game? So they must be awful.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, I think to me, and fairly or unfairly, I think you don't look at it so much from a positional player. Well, from a non-quarterback, I think, because quarterbacks are tied to that win-loss record, I feel like.
Right.
You know,
which,
whether that's
way,
fair or not.
By the way, is one of the more bogus stats out there because it's strictly the man who starts the game. So if Tom Brady started and pulled a hamstring on the second play of the game and they won 40-3, you know he gets the win, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so.
No, I know. I understand what you're saying, but
because you asked me to talk you out of it, so far so good.
You may have changed my mind, Russell. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, well. my point is, this is a team game. We went over the stats. No Super Bowl quarterback leading the league in passing yards in 52 years. You even talked about Kurt Warner as the MVP and so on. You have got to have the supporting cast. What ultimately cost the Patriots a Super Bowl this year? Their defense. Their defense was not, even though it played better, if you look throughout the year, they gave up chunk play after chunk play after chunk play. And that made them very susceptible to the Eagles, okay? So, I mean, I don't credit Tom Brady for winning Super Bowl, 51 and losing Super Bowl 52. I look at it is that he is part of the team. I mean, I just told you the year in 2001, okay? Whereas Tom Brady wasn't even on the field in Pittsburgh when they won the AFC Championship game because he got hurt in the second quarter. And yet he goes down as the starting quarterback who won the AFC Championship game that year. So
yeah,
I think the flaw in all of these overrated, underrated, and thank God you didn't ask me about LeBron James and Michael Jordan. Okay. I think the flaw in all of that is, and listen, there's a lot of my media brethren who are highly guilty of this. They want to make team sports about an individual. And I've always had kind of a theory about that. People who don't talk team about team sports probably aren't team players themselves.
Right. No, it's true. And it's difficult. I mean, I guess that becomes the – when you try to talk generational things, I think the MJ LeBron thing is so interesting. And I mean, God, that's like a whole separate podcast into itself. But I think, when people start talking about generational gaps, they start to say – they just look at championships. They say, well, how many championships do these guys have and how many championships do they have? And, but then you look at it like Jordan played with these Hall of Famers and he played with these Hall of Famers. And if you're really looking at championships, Bill Russell's number one because he's got 11 and no one else is even close to that. So it's like, so it's one of those things where it's like, well, do you want to count championships or do you not want to count championships? Because if you do, then,
Here's the thing. I've always felt, and listen, I've been in this business a long time. The people who talk quarterbacks and championships, frankly, in no disrespect, lazy.
Right.
Lazy.
Right.
Oh, he won this, won that, so he must be the best. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, anybody talking Jim Plunkett in terms of all-time great quarterbacks?
Right. I don't think so, no.
Well, I mean, two Super Bowl titles in 4 years. Why not?
Right. Right. Well, it's true. I mean, it's funny that people talk about, you have to be – you have to win and you have to do this and you have to do that. And yet Terry Bradshaw's got four championships and nobody talks about him as the greatest quarterback. So it's
And they don't have, one of the reasons I've always felt the Steelers of the 70s were the best team I saw, okay, was, here's something to keep in mind. When they won the title in 74 and 75, the rules were different. Okay? They then changed the rules in 1978 to open up the passing game. That's really when the passing game started to take flight. Okay? In 1976 and 77, there were records amount of shutouts. A lot of those because the Buccaneers were in the league the first 2 years. But defense and running ruled. Okay? Yeah. In 78, pass protection rules changed. The five-yard bump rule changed, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? The Steelers winning Super Bowls in 74 and 75 featured Bradshaw almost complimentary to Franco Harris and certainly complimentary to the Steel Curtain.
Right.
In 1978, Terry Bradshaw was the MVP. In 78 and 79, they won as a totally different style team, and they probably don't win those titles without Terry Bradshaw.
Right. No, it's a good point. It is a good point, and it's something people don't talk about. You mentioned Tampa. Bum Phillips may be the greatest quote of in the history of the NFL. His first year when they asked about, you know, what do you think about your team's execution? And he said, you know, I encourage it, or I think it's a great idea. It's just...
Right. Well, I don't think you're talking Bum Phillips, my friend. I think you're talking about John McKay.
Oh, that's wrong guy. Sorry. That was my mistake. You're right.
Bum John Phillips McKay. Was the coach of the Houston Oilers.
Correct.
With Earl Campbell and so on. He was the one who said, you know, used to always have quotes about, you know, knocking down the door and so on.
Right.
So, but no, John McKay, you know, I think who I believe, you know, was great, not believe, but I mean, he was a great head coach at USC and then took my, along with that quote, I'm in favor of it, the team's execution.
I'm in favor of it, yeah.
Was him explaining the reason that they had a 5-year plan in Tampa is because he had a 5-year contract.
So. Yeah, he was a guy or something else.
He was a character.
Yeah. So, and they needed, I mean, you got to have some entertainment down there when they got into the league.
Well, I mean, they lost their first 26. Here's an odd stat, and we can wrap it up with this. This is the oddity of oddities. It took the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 27 games to win their first game. Okay? They lost their first 26. In their first game they won, their defense scored 3 touchdowns. It took Tampa Bay 27 years to win a Super Bowl. When they beat the Raiders, their defense scored 3 touchdowns.
Man, you got these stats have kind of blown my mind here today, Russ. That's pretty impressive. That's a heck of a stat right there. And
well,
I know
it's a funny thing more than anything else. It's more, you know, there's stats that really mean something, and then there's, you know, numbers that are more coincidental than anything else. That's just one of those kind of fun ones. I mean, it's like the Steelers of the 70s, the only team they didn't beat, I think, in the regular season during that decade were the Rams, and they beat the Rams in Super Bowl 14. And 10 years later, the only team that the 49ers hadn't beaten the regular season were the Denver Broncos, and then they beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 24. What does it mean? It's a giggle.
Right, exactly. No, it's true. I mean, it's like, you know, Kennedy having, you know, a guy on his staff named Lincoln, and Lincoln having a guy on his staff named Kennedy, and, you know, just things like that. But it's
right, and then, of course, there was the great offensive tackle, Lincoln Kennedy.
Right, see? Look at that. So... that wasn't planned, by the way, people, in case you were wondering. That was all Russell right there coming through with that one. So thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it a lot. I love football history. My dad has been going to Patriots games since 1967 when they played at Fenway Park, and I've had tickets since 2000. And, you know, I just – the history of the game fascinates me. And so I think, you know, what you do is really cool, and – you know, being on that historical side of it is really interesting because there is so much history behind, you know, the game and what we're doing and how we're doing it. And it's, you know, it's fascinating. And it's, I think it's something that we shouldn't lose sight of because it is important regardless of what's going on at the time. So it's pretty cool that you came on. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, as you may or may not know, I do a lot of radio with the Patriots, patriots.com radio with John Rook, which I've been doing his Patriots Playbook show. Since 2001, as a matter of fact. So
I didn't realize that.
And
cool.
I'm not that I live in the small town in Connecticut, not that far from Foxborough. I play no favorites, but that happens to be a show that I've consistently done for a long time. Yeah, football history. I mean, you have to to see where the game has come. You know, and I've been watching football since 1969. I mean, it's changed dramatically. Teams have changed dramatically. The physicality of the game has changed dramatically. People might be surprised to know the game was a lot more physical in the 60s, 70s, 80s than it is now. That's not saying it's not physical. It's just it's different. I mean, coaching is different. The time you get to coach, the contact, it's, everything's different. So
yeah.
It's a game of constant reminders and so on. But, I mean, you know, you got to remember where you came from and how far this league has come. I mean, next year in 2019 will be the 100th season of the NFL in 2019.
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool. 100 years. It's pretty nuts. So, all right. Well, before you leave, where can people find you? Where can they read your stuff or interact with you?
I'm glad you said read my stuff, because I really don't know if I want people finding me, actually. Yeah, like a little privacy. I tell people all the time, Vax Football Guru on Twitter. It's something I really, really enjoy. Again, all the pieces and the work I do, all sent out on there. ProFootballGuru.com is my website. But if you go on Facebook and Instagram, you'll find Pro Football Guru. And one of the things I also take pride in on Facebook is I have some team pages. You know, I have a Patriots PFG and Steelers PFG, Redskins PFG, Cowboys, Packers. Might expand that this year. It's been kind of a two-year experiment. You know, I'll also do another page called NFL Equal Rights, WRITES. I invite people to come on if you want to write something for me. That would be great. Also another page, Sports Positively Speaking, which we kind of try to focus on the positives and so on, which there are more out there than I think people realize. So as Liam Neeson once said, I have a special set of skills. So,
well, that's cool.
I will look for you, I will find you, and I will follow you on Twitter if you follow me.
All right. I like that. Yeah, it's great. And that's really cool. So definitely check all that stuff out. I mean, I was on Football Guru like the last few weeks, just kind of looking around, and the draft stuff is really cool, and just kind of following different things, you know, that you do and that you're doing on there. It's an interesting place to be for sure. And I think that, like I said, the history part of it is cool, and you're looking at it from a different perspective. It's not ESPN.com, because that's, you could get ESPN.com on ESPN. So, you know, it's a different look at it. But I think it's an interesting look at it, and it's something that, you know, I enjoyed a lot. And so I think, you know, for people that haven't been on there, it's definitely a good take.
Well, I appreciate that, sir.
Okay, so that was a really, really fun interview with Russell. And again, appreciate him coming on a lot. He's a super, super knowledgeable guy and a lot of fun to talk to about football. And I definitely recommend following him on Twitter. I actually followed him before I started hosting a podcast, when I just had a personal account on Twitter. He was one of the first kind of real football guys that I followed. So again, he mentioned it on there, but I'll just mention it again. It's at Bax Football Guru. So it's B-A-X Football Guru. And again, great follow, really, really nice guy. So we appreciate him coming on. So let's get into a few segments here. We have This Week in Sports History, but first we're going to start with a three-minute drill. I wanted to do the three-minute drill on Infinity War this week. I will do a three-minute drill on Infinity War. Trust me, all you Marvel heads out there, I'll get it. I'll get to it. But I had to talk about the Red Sox today, as much as I really kind of don't want to. I'm going to do it. So here's our three-minute drill. Let's get it queued up. Here's our three-minute drill on the Boston Red Sox. So, look, here's the big thing for me, right? They just fell out of first place. They're, what, 25-11 at this point right now. They're actually in the middle of a game against the Yankees currently, where they were winning 4-0. So we'll see if that holds up or not. But, you know, look, they're in that kind of little bit of a point where they're struggling a little bit. They're 8-9 since April 20th. They haven't been playing great baseball. They just dropped out of first place for the first time in a while. You know, and this is really where it's going to be tested. You know, what does Alex Cora really bring to the table? You know, what does he do for your franchise? Is he going to be able to, you know, lead these guys through the slump that they're playing in and, you know, kind of get them through the other side? So we'll see what happens. I don't know if you have a ton of confidence in him, but I think, you know, at least early on in the season, you got to have a little bit of confidence in him at least. I just, the guy for me that kills me is David Price. I just, for God's sakes, David freaking Price. And JBJ, before I get to David Price, because I got a lot to rant about him, JBJ, just sit him down. Just sit him down for a little bit. Just say, hey, look, your mind is not in it, man. You're an automatic out every time you get to the plate. Just take a break, sit down, and, you know, we're fine. Like, you'll be okay. You're still a great center fielder, and, you know, you're a streaky hitter, but, like, this is, it's getting a little ridiculous. So, you know, give JBJ a break, would you please? The David Price thing, he is such a puddle of poo. He's just awful. No, he's so unlikable. You can't root for him. Now he's complaining that he has allergies. Like, he can't do his job because he's... Get the hell out of here with that. And, you know, maybe he's, you know, plays too many video games, so his hands are... Like, what the hell is going on with this guy? He's getting paid $30 freaking million a year, and he comes in here and he's a bum. And he can't handle it, and he can't handle the pressure, and he just, it is mind-numbing, this guy. And, you know, it all comes back to the John Lester decision. I know we talked about it with Mike, that's the decision. That's the deciding decision. The John Lester decision comes back to bite them in the ass big time. Because if you had Lester here, you would have paid him a hell of a lot less than you would have paid David Price. You don't ever sign Price in the first place. So, you know, it's one of those things where you really, really screwed up with that Lester decision, and now you're stuck with David Price, and this guy is a bum. I don't know how you could possibly trust him in the postseason, you know, in this year, which is supposed to be a big year for him. I mean, he can opt out at the end of this year and get paid somewhere else, and he's not even really going to put in a ton of effort. Here he is, like, not even playing and not even starting in some of his starts. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. And so I am so out on David Price. Trade his ass. Get him the hell out of here. Freaking DFA him for all I care, dude. Just get him the hell out of this team. And, you know, I'm done with Price. We'll see what the Red Sox. I think they'll turn it around eventually. They're not going to be, you know, they're not going to go sub 500, I don't think. I don't know whether they'll finish first in the division. I think the Yankees are a better team than them overall. But I think they're better than what they've shown in the last, you know, few weeks or whatever. So, you know, we'll see. It'll all kind of even out in the, at the end of the year. So, you know, I think somebody said, and I think it was Dale from Dale and Keith, Dale Arnold said, I believe, you know, that, you know, a baseball season isn't a novel. It's a collection of short stories. So it's a bunch of different, you know, seasons all kind of together. And I do believe some of that. Yeah, they're going through a little slump now. They can pull out of it, but core is going to be that deciding factor. So we'll see. So, all right, so let's get into This Week in Sports History. And as always with This Week in Sports History, I'm going to go in chronological order. So I'm going to start with May 11th, 1897. And that's Washington Senator catcher Duke Farrell throws out 8 out of 9 attempted steals. I mean, 9 attempted steals, and he threw out 8. Like, at a certain point, don't you think he'd just, like, stop running? The guy keeps throwing people out. But, you know, nevertheless, it's still a record, by the way, or at least it was a record. I believe it's still a record, because nobody does it anymore. That's just stupid. But I will say, people really like to run on Duke. He played just over 1,000 games as a catcher, and in those 1,000 games as a catcher, there were over 2,500 stolen base attempts against him. I mean, that's like, that number is ridiculous, but I think, you know, baseball was different back then, but that is just totally insane. His percentage is about 44% where he threw people out. So, decent percentage, you know, for especially if you're getting run on that much. You would think they'd learn, but obviously they didn't. So, you know, Bill James would be freaking the hell out if he let them live back then. But nevertheless, Moneyball hadn't been invented back then. Bill James hasn't even been born yet, so... So, you know, it didn't matter back then, I suppose. All right, so let's go to the next one. May 11th, 1919, another Washington Senators. The Senators and the Yankees play to a 0-0 tie. So what's interesting is that Walter Johnson, who was the the Senators pitcher that day, went 12 innings, gave up 2 hits and 1 walk. So he allowed 3 base runners in 12 innings. Jack Quinn, who was the Yankees pitcher, also goes 12 innings. He gives up 10 hits and 4 walks. 10 hits and 4 walks. Are you kidding? 14 guys got on base, and they couldn't score a single flipping run. It's ridiculous. The game features such legends as Wally Pipp, who obviously was replaced by Lou Gehrig, Patsy Garrity, and who could forget Home Run Baker? Of course, that was his name, Home Run Baker. And the reason why is because he hit an amazing 12 home runs one year. Unbelievable, sensational home run hitter, Home Run Baker. So those are the days back in 1919. And our last one is May 10th, 1970. And that is, of course, Bobby Orr scoring in overtime to beat the St. Louis Blues, complete the sweep. Probably the most famous picture, certainly in Boston sports and perhaps even all of sports, you know, as he scores, total, you know, horizontal to the ice, laid out, arms in the air, celebrating as he goes. You know, the statue is outside the garden still. It's pretty unbelievable. Still gives you chills to watch it and to see it. Obviously, I wasn't alive in 1970, but, you know, for those people that were, what a moment that must have been. Really awesome, unbelievable moment. And, you know, again, in OT, and it's not like it was game seven. I mean, it was a sweep, but even still, you know, to win in overtime on such a dramatic play like that, I think it was like less than a minute into overtime when they scored too. So, you know, so pretty cool there. So anyways, that was May 10th, 1970. Unfortunately, the Bruins, as I said, won't be celebrating any Stanley Cup championships this year. But you never know. Maybe the Vegas Grand Knights will be doing it. The Vegas Golden Knights will be doing it. That might be interesting. So, anyways, that's all we got for the show today. I really appreciate Russell coming on. Again, you know, make sure you check him out at BaxFootballGuru on Twitter. And check out all his content. He does some really, really cool stuff. And so, definitely worth a look. Appreciate Marcus for the intro song. Again, he is from the Boxers Podcast, so that's at Boxers Podcast, and he's actually at Mr_Bestivus, but, you know, subscribe to the Boxers Podcast. They come out on Mondays, you know, Honor the Triforce, Mac and Goo comes out Tuesdays and Thursdays and Fridays, and the Dork Podcast comes out Wednesdays usually, so, you know, Honor the Triforce as well. We appreciate them. They've all been on the show. Well, not all of them have been on the show, but some representative from each show has been on my shows, which is pretty cool. So, also want to thank MDOT and Core for the outro song. You can find MDOT on Instagram and Twitter at MDOTBoston, and Core is on Twitter at Core of EMS, and that's KORE of EMS. We appreciate them. As always, for me, I'm at Weekend War Pod on Twitter. WKNDWARPOD. It's Weekend War Pod with no E's. Really simple. You can also follow my personal account at WTP Lane. We have Weekend Warrior Podcast on Facebook. You can follow us there. I'm on Instagram at Weekend War Pod. So, you know, follow the show wherever. Subscribe and review on iTunes. Really would appreciate that. You know, if you can rate us and review us on iTunes, you know, give those 5-star reviews. It definitely helps the show. So any little thing you can do would really help. All right, and that does it for this week's episode. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. And I will see you next week. Stay thirsty, my friends. Yeah, okay. Maybe it wasn't the best outro, okay? But instead of being negative about it, okay, why don't you try being positive, be a little constructive, and give me some freaking ideas for a catchphrase at the end, please, okay? Jesus. Play the damn outro song.
Turn me up on that. that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get them in, and I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell. Kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm batting this mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors, you'll need to tune in.